Hey everyone, Evan Damerill here, co-host of Locked On Cavs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. On today's episode, we begin Locked On Cavs Under the Bubble. Obviously, Cleveland was not invited to the Disney Bubble to compete for an NBA championship, even though technically they weren't mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. So instead, Chris and I were able to round up and gather experts and writers and anything in between to talk about the teams that were invited. On today's episode, we're joined by Renee Washington to discuss the Washington Wizards, Gerald Bourguet to discuss the Phoenix Suns, and Nick Crane to discuss the Oklahoma City Thunder. Be sure to give all three of them a follow on social and check out their work as well. And thank you for listening, and as always, go Cavs.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving. He's gone. Xbox at him today. At the cue.
On the blow block. He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Joining me today is Renee Washington, host of Locked On Wizards, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, to talk about the Washington Wizards and their aspiration under the Disney bubble. But before we get started, though, Renee, how are you?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, and I am good. Everything's going well. Sports are back. You know, I've been watching as the various sports have been returning. Soccer has just finishing up their NWSL championship. The NBA tipped off. Of course, we've been following the NBA as they've returned. So it's been an exciting time. And honestly, it all happened so fast. So I'm just happy to be back covering sports, doing what we love.
No, absolutely. And do you think it's a bit coincidental that you host a podcast about the Wizards and your last name is Washington? That is something I thought of while we were setting this up and didn't know if it was a dumb question, but I'm just curious.
You know, it's funny. I started doing this like sign out on my show, Washington Out, because my name is Washington. And I'm a very nostalgic, cheesy person where I literally love it. I'm trying to find some more creative ways to connect the fact that my last name is the same as, you know, the Wizards, and even for the fact that I cover the Mystics. So it's very coincidental, and I'm trying to like take it and run with it as much as I can.
You got to do what you got to do, and I respect it. I wish Chris and I had something like that to work with the Cavs, but you know, it is what it is. But what have you seen so far from the Wizards while they have been on this? I've been calling it a Disney vacation. So what have you seen so far from the Wizards while on their own Disney vacation?
I like that. It has been a very exciting time, in my opinion, for the Wizards, to be honest. I know coming down to Orlando, there's been a lot of questions around, you know, kind of people were even just negatively saying, what's the point?
Yeah.
And once Bradley Beal opted out, once Davis Bertans wasn't there, of course, John Wall not being healthy and not being able to play, those three being their three leading scorers, there's a lot of uncertainty and people just weren't really sure what to expect from the Wizards. So one thing that I've really enjoyed watching is the way that it's kind of unfolded and how this team coming down with all these young players just trying to figure out their way in the NBA, trying to learn their identity and their roles, and also a team that we know is rebuilding that's going to be looking to see as we get into the postseason and, of course, in the offseason, which players are going to be able to help this team be in the playoffs and be a team that's competing for a playoff spot and competing to be a top in the East. So I think the biggest thing I always talk about on my show is just the opportunity that's here.
Yeah.
And that is for any young player, it doesn't get much better than this. You're in the bubble, all eyes are on you. You have an opportunity to not only show what you can do, but help be a part of this team where there's zero expectation for them, help them at least be competitive and have a chance to get into at least a play-in game, if not a postseason game, and see what happens from there. So it's kind of exciting because there's zero expectations. You know, when you look at some teams, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Bucks, the Celtics, they have a lot more pressure in that sense. So for the Wizards, it's been, for me anyways, exciting to cover the fact that you're watching these players grow in their vacation, as you call it, grow up and really figure out who they are and building confidence with each practice, with each, and now as they get into scrimmages with each game.
No, that makes absolutely total sense. I guess the Wizards are an interesting team because when I was looking into their situation, because I know, that was a big consensus for them. Even Brooklyn as well, with all their players opting out. And then, I mean, you have teams like Phoenix as well, they're kind of thinking, what's really the point in bringing everybody to the table here? But Washington's only 5.5 back of Orlando, technically for the eighth seed. And Brooklyn's not really bringing their best squad, so Orlando could jump up to 7. Do you think Washington could make a run and sneak in to the playoffs as the 8th seed if things kind of went their way?
You know, I'm always a fan of an underdog. Mm-hmm. You know, as an athlete, I always took on that. As the teams that I follow, even like being an Eagles fan in football, I'm all about the underdog. So I would love nothing more than for them to make a run. Of course, for me, covering them would make my job that much more exciting be able to follow it. But, you know, I do think that this is a team that, because a lot of people are sleeping on them in that sense, that's when a team really is dangerous. Now, I don't think, just being realistic, and anything could happen, of course, but I don't see them being a team that wins the East or makes it to the finals or anything like that. But I do see them as a team that, being 5.5 games back, as you mentioned, them, the Magic, the Nets, we don't really know exactly out of these three teams who's going to be a shoe-in to get that 7 or 8 spot. So I think it's still up for grabs in that sense. The hardest thing is going to be there's only 8 games. You know, there's not a lot of time to mess around. There's not a lot of chances to you know, still be figuring things out. You've got to get it right with each game. So I think that's going to be the hardest part, because we do have so many players, and when you're looking across the Wizards roster, there's so many players that we're still not really sure how it's going to translate to them playing consistently.
Yeah.
And that's what they're going to need in 8 games. If there's no room for error. So that's the unfortunate part. But I think essentially they come down, let's say they don't do well, no one is going to be surprised by that. So that's something that I think is going to be a strength for them. You have these young, hungry, ambitious players that are trying to show their worth in the league, to show their worth being a part of this team and moving forward, be a pivotal role in it. That's what I think is really their driving factor right now that's going to help them. And I honestly see them being an underdog to make a run to at least fight for a play-in game, if not actually get to a playoff spot.
No, absolutely. Do you think Denver going 5 big in their first, I guess, preseason scrimmage at Disney threw them for a loop? Or do you think it's just a, you know, a good bonding experience? Because, I don't know, Cleveland's pulled similar stunts where they try and pull out as many big guys as well, and it's thrown opposing teams for the loop. But I guess, what was your reaction to it? As someone who covers the Wizards a lot more closely, like, how did you feel when you saw Bol Bol, who is a gargantuan human, starting at small forward for the Nuggets, and even Nikola Jokic, who is also a gargantuan human, starting at point guard for them?
My first thought was Space Jam, the Monstars.
There you
and
go.
I can't unsee that. You know, it's just this lineup, having 4 players that played center and having a lineup of 6'7" and taller as your starting 5. It's just, it's historic. And I would expect nothing less of this already crazy, unpredictable 2020 that we're living in, but even around sports, of course. So, you know, it was in itself fun to watch how that unfolded. And I know for Coach Brooks and for the players, they were openly saying, like, look, we're not going to ever have to deal with that again. It was a great experience. It was honestly exciting, even from a social media side, to see so many people buzzing around the Wizards. Now, it was not all for the right reasons. They were talking about, of course, Bol Bol not being on the Wizards. They were talking about the lineup, but at least people were paying attention, you know. And that was something, like, I know having this team where there's a lot of people that are already counting them out, it was just kind of great to see them being in the midst of the conversation around the NBA bubble, regardless of the fact that it wasn't really on the right side of it. But I know the team was saying that they were just looking at that. It was a challenge. It was an opportunity to face such a lineup that you will never, ever have to play again, and or hopefully have to play that sizable lineup again. But also for the Wizards, being that rebounding is a big thing they're working on, as well as their defensive game. What better way to challenge you on how you're switching through picks and how you're battling in terms of in the paint and getting rebounds and competing for rebounds than to play a lineup like that? So I think it's going to only help building that confidence to know that you're able defensively to hang with them, in a sense, when you're playing against all-stars like the Joker and a lineup like that. So in the long run, it's just hopefully going to be something that'll help them be stronger moving forward. Yeah. And also, that's one of those moments that you're going to be able to look back on and say, hey, remember when? You know, remember when we had the chance to play against the Monstars? So we'll see how it plays out in the long run.
I really like that reference. I'm going to have to pin that one in my cap as well, just to, like, whenever I think about that going forward, because I doubt the Nuggets will pull that stunt again. But, hey, weird things have happened, and it's a weird time in sports. But I guess a good launching point from that is Denver is arguably the third best team in the West, and then the Wizards get the luxury of playing the Western Conference gauntlet in their scrimmages, where they played the Clippers yesterday and then they played the Lakers on Monday. How huge is that for the younger players like Rui Hachimura, Mo Wagner, and Troy Brown as well? I mean, Troy Brown did sit out against the Clippers with a thumb injury, but being able to play such vaunted teams like that and then
you get to play your seeding games. Like, that has to give, one, that experience has to be invaluable, right? And two, like, being able to hang, I mean, like, first off, you play that weird lineup against the Nuggets, but you hang in it with the Clippers and you only lose 105 to 100. I mean, that has to give the younger guys on the Wizards a lot of confidence and swagger heading into these actual meaningful games, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing I look at about this scrimmage schedule and then their regular season schedule is, for the Wizards, nothing is guaranteed, of course. You know, they only have those three games of scrimmages and the eight games that are guaranteed. So they might not face the Lakers, the Clippers, or the Nuggets. Looking at the regular season schedule, they're not scheduled to play any of them. So now you get a chance, when you look across their 11 games that they have, you're getting to play a variety of opponents. And I think something that I keep going back to about this Wizards team is, it's much more, as much as they're trying to fight for a playoff spot, don't get me wrong, everyone is in Orlando competing for, you know, to make the farthest run possible and be there as long as possible. This is also a young team that's building. So when you look at having the ability to play three of the top teams in the league in your scrimmages on top of the eight games that they get, there's no slouches. That, and it's forcing them, these players who are in this position where they have to step up, it's forcing them to step up. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing right now. I mean, Isak Bonga is a player, Rui Hachimura, Troy Brown, of course, against the Nuggets. And as you mentioned, he wasn't able to play against the Clippers. But these are players that we're seeing kind of coming into their own. Now, they're making mistakes. They're missing shots. They're not playing perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But they're learning. They're being, like, thrown into it and learning through this experience. So, honestly, I think for the Wizards to have this three-game trio of playing the top teams, the top players in the league, you're playing Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers, LeBron James and the Lakers, the Joker, you're playing a Monstars lineup.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any better than that.
No, not
at all. I think they're taking their lumps, and they need to take their lumps in this sense, because there's no Bradley Beal or John Wall there. There's no Davis Bertans. So it's forcing them to have to learn and get experience that, had they not played these three in their scrimmages, let's say they don't make the postseason, you don't get to see these teams without Bradley Beal, without DB, without Wall. So if you can see that against, granted, it's just a scrimmage and every team is still working off the rust and working through things, I'm not going to say anything far-fetched as to the fact they were able to hang with the Clippers and hang with the Nuggets, but it's still a confidence booster.
Yeah.
You know, when you see Rui Hachimura getting a steal against Kawhi Leonard, that's a confidence booster. So I think it's more from what I'm thinking of as a, from a coaching perspective, is like, if I'm Coach Brooks, I'm looking at these 11 games. Of course, you're trying to go as far as possible, but you're also looking forward to next year. These are players proving their worth as to why they should be a part of this Wizards team moving forward. Now, when you bring back Beal and DB and Wall healthy, it's a whole different team, and that confidence will translate into their play in that way.
Speaking of coaching and looking ahead, do you think Scott Brooks will be back next year? He has a record of 24-40 right now and has had mixed results since coming to the Wizards. He started out 49-33 and it's just been kind of a gradual decline since then. Do you think he'll be back next year, just because no one really saw John? I mean, everyone saw John being out, but Brad as well. Like, do you think he'll get another chance to, you know, run it back with a fully healthy squad, or do you think the Wizards will move on from him after this year?
You know, I'm not sure. It's a business at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, and they have to do as a front office, what's best for the franchise moving forward. I think this Disney experience actually will help him, because there is no expectation. So if you come in and you're able to do well, and I think right now, you know, from what I get, the sense I get from Wizards fan is there's some sort of optimism there because of the way the Wizards looked in the first two scrimmages. So if they come down and they completely tank and they're just getting blown out of the water every game, I think without a doubt, there's going to be a lot of question marks, not only around Scott Brooks, but around some other players as well on the team. But I think if they're able to be competitive and do better and just exceed expectation in that sense without having player, you know, BLDB and Wall, it might allow him to extend and keep his opportunity in DC. So, you know, I'm not positive. I definitely think this is a program that, you know, there's changes needed. So right now, I think this bubble and vacation is a proving point, not only for players, but also for Coach Brooks. So I think it depends a lot on how they look and not as much just the results, but how they're looking and how they're competing.
No, absolutely. And I actually have one last question for you, and I'm sure you've heard this a million times before we wrap this up. Do you think the Wizards should try and trade Brad this summer and sell high on him to a team like Brooklyn? Or, I mean, I think Denver's a fun option too, and I think the Wizards could try and get a really good return for him. Or wait till John's healthy, run it back one more time, and see if him and Brad can make some noise in what's a fairly weak Eastern Conference. There is Milwaukee and Boston at the top, like we've touched on. And I mean, Toronto's no slouch either, but and Miami's pretty good, but Washington can be in the thick of it as well with two an all-star backcourt like that. Do you think they should run it back one more time, or do you think they should just start to tear things down and really embrace a full-blown rebuild?
So I know this has been a constant question around Bradley Beal, and yeah. I know John Wall has been openly saying they're one of the best backcourts in the league, and the team's very optimistic on when those two are healthy, just what they can bring to the floor. But there's been a lot of issues in DC, you know, around health, around consistency. And Bradley Beal trade rumors, they don't end. But I think the biggest question I have is I don't see a move as of yet. Mm-hmm. Granted, I'm not in these conversations, so I'm not fully in on the exact details of the trade. I've yet to see a trade that makes sense for the Wizards. So if they're going to trade Bradley Beal, the Lakers, the Pelicans, the Nets, all these teams that keep coming up, who are you trading him for? They're in rebuild mode, and they would need to bring in one or two all-star caliber players. If not one all-star caliber player, two players that together can bring that level of what he's averaging as 30 points a game. So I haven't seen a trade that makes sense. And I think that's something that's going to kind of shift, you know, in terms of whether or not this trade actually happens. I know Beal's mentioned he wants to stay in DC, but also, as we're talking about, the Wizards have struggled year after year. So at some point, players want to make a move that makes sense for them to have a better chance of being successful. So I think if it comes down to it, you know, it's going to be a matter of the Wizards are going to have to be, very smart in this move, because you don't want to trade him, bring in one or two guys that doesn't make sense, and now you're back to square one. Oh, so if I'm in that position, I think you try to get Beal and Wall healthy. You see how these players do in this pre-test cycle, I guess you can call it. Mm-hmm. Now they're all – it's like a tryout period for them in Orlando. See who shows that they're worth keeping around. And maybe some of these players are players that you trade, one or two of them that do well in Orlando. I think that's actually a better move versus trading Beal.
No, that makes a ton of sense.
They don't pay me the big bucks.
That's – part of the fun is the speculation, but I agree.
Oh, yeah.
It's tough for, I mean, Washington is a bigger market, but I guess people look at them as a smaller team on the grand scale of just the NBA as a whole. And stars like Brad Beal don't really grow on trees, and you want to hold on to them with dear life. But I mean, if you have to move on, like you said, you have to move on and like do what's best for the player, and Brad's looking out for his best interest. But like you said, he's expressed a desire to be here. And I actually like that idea where you really evaluate some of these complementary pieces the Wizards have. And if one of them really shows out, you could sell high on them instead mm-hmm. build around John and Brad. I think that's a great idea. But Renee, before we go, tell everyone listening where they can find you on social and everything else. And then obviously you plug your show, but is there anything else you want to plug before we wrap things up?
Absolutely. So Locked On Wizards each day, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Wizards. Check out our deep discussions around the Wizards and the NBA. And then you can also follow my personal pages of doing a lot of sports coverage and content in general, covering the Mystics and the WNBA, covering the NBA, covering the NFL, all sports we're talking throughout my page and my shows that I'm doing. So it's at Renee P. Wash on Twitter and at Renee P. Washington on Facebook and Instagram. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been fun. And I just love the fact we can have these speculatory types of conversations mm-hmm. again. It's been
it's been long overdue. Yeah, no, it really has been. Part of the reason Chris and I are doing this are because the Cavs might be able to do something in Chicago in September. So we have a little bit of FOMO for everybody else, but I'm happy to talk about the NBA as a whole, because it is fun just to talk about teams that are involved in this. But no, thank you again. And everyone, please give Renee a follow. Check out Locked On Wizards. Check out all of her work, like she said, and keep listening. Chris and I will be back with more soon after this break. Joining me now is writer/editor for Fansided NBA and the Step Back and Phoenix Suns reporter Gerald Bourget. Gerald, thanks for joining us, and how are you today?
I'm doing great, Evan. How about yourself?
I can't complain, all things considered. You know, it's still hard to believe we're in the middle of a pandemic. I think about this a lot, where I thought this is going to last a month tops, and basketball was on shutdown for over 5 months. So nearly 5 months. It's been a while, so. It's surreal to think, but unfortunately, I'm sure as you know, the Cavs didn't get the invite, but your Suns did. And just tell me, how have they looked so far under the bubble with the scrimmage, with scrimmage play opening up?
Actually pretty good so far. I mean, I think they were one of the teams, along with the Wizards, that you kind of looked at for getting the invite and asked, you know, why are they going? Why did they get the invite? They're not close to the playoff picture right now, but with the rules, you know, only having to be four games out of the eight seed to get, if you're the ninth place team, to get that play-in scenario, they've got a fighting chance. They pretty much got to go like 7-1 or 8-0 to have any prayer, but they've looked pretty good so far. The starting lineup has been pretty solid. They played their first game without Ricky Rubio, and they don't have Kelly Oubre still, but they played pretty well. The bench has been kind of up and down, but that's been the case all season long. But you know, Booker's looked good in his time on the court. Mikal Bridges has been really aggressive and has been just putting the clamps on people defensively. And Dario Saric has been very physical. So it's been good to watch the Suns playing again and actually playing at an enjoyable level so far.
That makes total sense. And actually, Mikal put the clamps on Jason Tatum, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Tatum, I think, shot 3 of 4 against everyone else. Wow. And, like, I can't remember what he shot for the rest of the game against Mikal, but it wasn't – I think he shot 6 for 17 overall, so he was, like, 3 for 13 or something like that against Mikal Bridges. He had a really nice turnaround against Mikal, but Bridges is just very quickly becoming a lockdown defender.
Let me jump forward and look at the big picture here. Like you said, they're only four games back of that ninth seed play-in scenario, and I think they're 6 games back from Memphis just for the 8th seed overall, which might be a little unobtainable just given that they're only playing 8 games. And like you said, if Phoenix goes 7-1, they're in that scenario. Do you think this Sun squad has what it takes to make a run for the playoffs and just kind of make some noise in the Western Conference? Or do you think this is more of a learning experience for guys like Devin Booker and then, like you said, Bridges, and then, I mean, Ricky Rubio's out, but like there's plenty of opportunities here, like maybe to get some consistency with the bench as well with actual valuable experience like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a can't-lose scenario for the Suns, because if they do put a run together, then that's kind of a coming-of-age moment for a young core, that Booker, Bridges, Ayton trio. And that would be great because, you know, Rubio's here for the next 2 seasons. Oubre is heading into a contract year next season. Even if he's not playing, it's good to have him on the bench, and he's a big part of the team chemistry and camaraderie. So just to get some of those younger guys experience, have them play meaningful games, even if there's only 8 of them, that's huge, because young teams, you know, that's kind of one of the bummers for a team like the Cavs, is like, even if it's only 8 games, these types of games are good for bonding with young cores. And it's good to have them playing in meaningful games when in a regular season that might not be the case. Yeah. So for the Suns, that would be great. I think they're more in the category of happy to be here and will take whatever they can get. I don't see them going, you know, 7-1 or 8-0, which is probably what it would take to beat out all the other, you know, 4 or 5 teams that are competing for that ninth place position. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think they won't be a pushover, and that's the most important thing, because Lord knows I've been covering this team as a member of credentialed media since 2015, like right when they – traded Goran Dragic and Isaiah Thomas away and brought in Brandon Knight, and it's been hard to find competitive basketball for very long over those stretches. So anything that this team accomplishes, just getting to watch Devin Booker playing some of the first meaningful games of his career, I mean, that's valuable for a Suns fan base that hasn't seen that kind of scenario in a while.
No, absolutely. And I mean, it also isn't it big as well for Monty Williams, who's in his first year as the Suns head coach, to just kind of keep building rapport and camaraderie. I mean, granted, he's had the full season, but I guess a comparison to make is JB Bickerstaff is trying to get acquainted with the Cavs. And for a team like Phoenix, who is young and developing, and you have a new head coach and installing his system on both offense and defense, like having the league come to a screeching halt like it did was such a bad time for teams like Phoenix and Cleveland. So do you think this is big for Monty as well? I'm sure you've heard from him during this as well, since you are credentialed with the team and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think the job that Monty has done this year can't be understated. I think Igor Kokoskov got an unfair shake of it, because if he'd have had the roster that Monty has, things might have turned out differently for him. But Monty has done a really good job, and this is something that didn't really happen with Igor for whatever reason, the locker room believes in him. They bought in. They listen to what he has to say, and they really care about what he has to say. He just speaks to them in a different way, for whatever reason. And I think that considering all the injuries that Phoenix has had this year, that DeAndre Ayton was out for 25 games, you know, they've had guys in and out of the rotation. They haven't been able to get steady production from the backup point guard spot. And now, you know, navigating a global pandemic and, you know, all the social justice issues in our country all at once. Mm-hmm. That's really difficult, but he's got his guys focused and they've bought in, and, you know, they're happy to be playing basketball while also cognizant of the fact that there are a lot bigger things going on in our country right now. So he's done an amazing job as a leader of this team. And that's saying nothing of the fact that, you know, with 17 games left in the regular season, when it was suspended, they had already won more games than they had in the past 5 years. So they were already at more wins than Devin Booker's ever experienced, which, poor guy, he's had 5 coaches, 2 GMs, and 70 teammates in his first 5 years in the league. So,
gosh.
Yeah, so it's good to have Monty here and have some sense of stability for a change.
Speaking of Book, actually, are you concerned at all that there were reports kind of floating around? And it feels like speculation, but that he was upset over the fact that the team didn't make an effort to trade for D'Angelo Russell. And I mean, I feel like Bradley Beal is the biggest target right now for next star player to get moved out of the situation. But it always feels like Book is going to be one of those guys as well, where there's going to be a lot of pundits and analysts who say, like, oh no, we need to get Devin Booker out of Phoenix. Do you think he's going to try and force his way out of Phoenix and possibly to Minnesota with Karl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo, or do you think he's happy with his situation?
Right. And I think obviously with D'Angelo Russell joining Karl Anthony Towns, like, everyone in Phoenix kind of braced for these reports to start coming out, because everybody knows that those three guys are really good friends, that they would probably like to play together at some point in their careers if they can help it. But the scenario for Booker and the Suns is the same as it's always been. If the Suns can put a competitive, good team around him, he wants to win here in Phoenix. You know, he's said it many times. He's never said anything to the contrary. He wants to build the Suns into a winner. You know, he's on that 5-year max contract now, which, like, just started. So he doesn't have leverage if he wants to push his way out, if he really was that upset. I think it's more speculation, you know, wishful thinking on the part of, you know, teams like the Timberwolves or the Knicks, who would love to have Devin Booker. But, you know, it is obviously something you've got to keep an eye on, because it probably would make sense that he was upset the Suns didn't make a move for D'Angelo Russell, even though Ricky Rubio has been great. You know, Russell is his friend. He's an all-star point guard. I just think if the Suns are, you know, playing playoff caliber basketball by next year, this isn't an issue. If they're not even close, if they haven't shown signs of growth, if he's, you know, starting to get frustrated with a front office that hasn't put anything good around him, then the conversation will change. And it's, you know, it's the same as it is with any star player. If the team puts a championship caliber team around their star player, more often than not, they're going to want to stay there. And if they don't, then Devin Booker is definitely going to be up for grabs, because as loyal as he's been to this fan base and to this franchise, you know, the organization has not shown him that same amount of reason to believe in them.
No, absolutely. And I guess I was speaking with Renee Washington. She is a host of Locked On Wizards, and she was talking about, well, more so I asked her, how do you feel about the Bradley Beal situation and how so many teams seem like they're lining up to try and get him? And she said, I view it more as an opportunity, like, if Disney, like, if it doesn't go as planned, do you think the Wizards are going to reevaluate their situation and start to tear things down and treat Brad? She said, no, I think they're going to keep it. And I more so view this as an opportunity for players that maybe you don't get to see a lot of on the Wizards that could be trade assets for the future. Do you think the Suns feel the same way, where they have a lot of players that are intriguing to a lot of teams that they could flip for assets and star players to maybe finally build a playoff worthy squad around Devin Booker and even DeAndre Ayton, who I feel like we don't talk about enough, who's a very good center and a very young, good young prospect?
Yeah. I mean, I think looking at the Suns' timeline, I don't see, I mean, I think if the right star became available and it was a no-brainer, then maybe Bridges is available, you know, Cam Johnson, future draft picks, stuff like that. But honestly, like, I don't really see them breaking up that Ayton, Booker, Bridges trio unless that perfect deal materializes, because, you know, they've got three young on the rise players. They've got Ricky Rubio at the point, who is, you know, he's either just turned 30 or still under 30. They've got that impending hole at the four spot, but Kelly Oubre, another young piece that they, if they keep him long-term, that lineup of Rubio, Booker, Oubre, Bridges, and Ayton posting an absurd net rating together. And it wasn't an extended time, but it was a good 20, 25 game sample size. And that was their starting lineup, and they were good with that. And I think that they need to address the bench. That's the biggest thing, is that starting lineup is great, and then the bench comes in and it's kind of helter skelter. You know, you never know what you're going to get. And that's the next step to building a regular routine, like perennial playoff team, is fixing that up, letting these young guys continue to bond together, build that chemistry. Because they've only had 1 year together, and I think they showed a lot of signs, but with guys in and out of the rotation, they never got that chance to build something stable, lasting, you know what I mean? So it'll be interesting to monitor that moving forward, but I don't think that James Jones is interested in breaking it up unless there's, you know, a no-brainer star that would like to play with Devin Booker in Phoenix.
No, absolutely. And before we wrap things up, just one last quick question for you. Who do you think is going to win probably the first and last Disney NBA championship?
The first and last Disney NBA championship. I'm probably going to go with the Milwaukee Bucks.
You make Ty Windish very happy.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Shout out to my boy Ty, my old Hoops Habit alum. But I think it'll be Clippers Bucks. And as long as they have, you know, a healthy Eric Bledsoe, and I think it was Pat Connaughton who also had coronavirus, as long as they have their healthy pieces, I just think that team is too good. They were the best team in the regular season by a stretch. My only concern is that this time off kind of took the wind out of their sails a little bit. A guy like LeBron is going to thrive in this environment. Same thing with Kawhi, but I just think the Bucks are too good, and I think Giannis has a lot to prove in this playoffs.
I think you and I are on the same page in that regard. I think this Bucks team is just too loaded to really ignore at this point, but that's going to do it for Gerald and I on this segment of Locked On Cavs. Gerald, before we head out, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you on social and everything, and if there's anything you want to plug, please feel free.
Yeah, for sure. You can find my writing at fansided.com/NBA. You can follow me on Twitter at GERALDBOURGUET. And I'm also co-hosting a new podcast with Shane Young, Sean Devaney, and Nick Crane, called the Putback Pod, which is on Apple and Spotify. You can follow us there. We're actually going to have our third episode is going to be up tomorrow night. So any new subscribers are always welcome.
Please follow Gerald, give him a listen. Nick Crane's a good guy as well. Actually, all those guys that you're hosting with are all good guys. You should give them a follow as well. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Chris and I will be back more with this Locked On Cavs Under the Bubble project we've been working on, and just stay tuned for more. Joining me now is fellow Forbes contributor who covers the Thunder, and he covers the NBA as a whole for Slam. He's a co-host of the Uncontested Podcast and the Putback Podcast, and he's an overall good guy, Nick Crane. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Evan. It's been a little bit since we've talked, but we finally have basketball right around the corner. I guess we have basketball now, but we've got full-time, real basketball that affects the standings, and people should be playing actual minutes.
No, for real. And I guess just to get things going here, as a guy who is a dyed-in-the-wool Thunder fan, and I can tell from just working with you at Forbes how passionate you are about this team, how have they looked to you so far under the bubble?
Well, they've been actually better than I thought, you know, with the obvious concerns of, you know, players being rusty, and with Oklahoma City being one of the hotter teams towards the end of this season before it got put on hiatus. You know, they were third best team in the NBA by record since Thanksgiving. So they were on a hot streak, and that's kind of worrisome when, you know, you take 4 months off and you're asked to keep that hot streak going and keep that chemistry going. And, you know, in media availability sessions leading up to the bubble, that's one thing Billy Donovan said is, you know, I'm not sure what to think of this team. He said, you know, to be honest, since that game in Oklahoma City against the Jazz where the season ended, I still have not had all of my guys together in one room to practice, and I won't until we get to the bubble. So he said, I have no clue what this team's going to look like. I think it's going to be really hard, to be honest, to keep that chemistry we had going, but we'll see when we get there. And they've already played two scrimmages. They won both. I know you have to take those with a grain of salt, but the chemistry and the way they love playing together and the comeback wins and all that kind of stuff that's going on right now for the Thunder looks pretty similar to what they were doing before the season ended. So I've been pretty surprised, actually.
You know, surprise is a good word to describe this Oklahoma City team. And they are really one of the more surprising and I think compelling stories this season. And I guess got to ask you, I mean, I didn't expect them to make the Western, be a Western Conference playoff team. I didn't really have that high of expectations after they traded away Paul George and Russell to the Clippers and Russell Westbrook to the Rockets. And, you know, I just got to ask you, do you think they're going to make some noise in the Western Conference playoffs, or do you just view this more as a learning experience for some of the younger guys like Shea and everybody else who's just kind of a key piece going forward for this Thunder squad?
You know, I will say I was with you. I didn't think this team was going to be near as good as they were, mainly because I didn't think the team they have now and the team they started the season with would stay intact. I thought Chris Paul was going to be a big trade chip. I thought Danilo Gallinari in the final year of his contract would be a good trade chip. You know, they had even a guy like Steven Adams, who just turned 27. Yes, he's a quality center, but for a team that we thought would be rebuilding this year and likely at some point will have to hit a reset button, I thought that he might not be kind of in their contention window 4 or 5 years down the road. So he might be a trade chip. So taking that into consideration, I did not think this team, A, would be a playoff team. B, the things that really stood out and made this season what it was for them was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's emergence. I think we can all admit, you know, you don't typically give a second-year player most improved just because they're supposed to improve from year one to year two. But if you took that aside, I think Shai would be an obvious most improved player candidate this year. Chris Paul's mm-hmm. resurgence as a player, I think he was starting to get, you know, talked about as washed up and injury prone and isn't the guy he once was. And I think he's erased that narrative. But to circle back and answer your final question about do I think this team can make noise in the playoffs, honestly, I think they're a team that has a chance to get out of the first round depending on the matchup. I think if they somehow, you know, lined up with the Utah Jazz or somehow, you know, jumped up to the 4 seed and maybe got a team like the Mavericks, that could be something that would be intriguing if the Mavs, you know, played well and moved up in the standings also. Outside of that, I don't see them beating either LA team. I don't see them beating the Nuggets and the Rockets. I think they're going to be an excellent team in the first round. So I think as far as my expectations, making noise in the West, depending on the standings, they'll get out of the first round. I don't think there's any way they're beating either LA team in the second round, though.
That's fair. I think that's a fair assessment. And I think, would you think it's fair to say that any win, I mean, if the Oklahoma City bounces in the first round, I think that's still a successful season, especially how you and I both thought they would go for them. But if they're able to knock off a few wins, you'd agree that that's it's been a good season for them, no matter how you shake it.
Yeah, certainly. And they haven't won a playoff series since Kevin Durant left. So I just think from a fan base point of view, if they were to get out of the first round, that in itself would almost feel like a championship for these fans just because mm-hmm. they've been knocked out in the first round so many years in a row. But no, I think if they went 6 games or 7 games in a first round series, ended up not getting out of the first round, I think just the excitement for the fans this season, the way they proved everybody wrong, the storyline, the up and coming Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think that overall you would consider it a win of a season especially when their preseason Vegas odds for their win total is only 31.5, which looking back is absurd.
Yeah, no, it really is. And it's this Thunder team is just so fascinating to me because, like you mentioned, it's a mixture of veterans with key veterans that you didn't expect to be here in Chris Paul. And then he was linked to Miami for the longest time, but it just ended up, he ended up staying here. And I think he gets a lot of credit for just, you know, embracing this role. And then as a Cleveland guy, I wish this is something Kevin Love did with the Cavaliers more, just embracing the moment and just embracing these younger players and lifting them up. But you also have Danilo Gallinari, who's a big piece, Steven Adams, who I think is underrated as all get, but I guess there's a returning piece for the Thunder and Andre Roberson. And I got to ask you, do you think that's going to be a big difference maker for the Thunder, or you think it's just not going to be that big a deal at all, just since he's been so gone from the court for such a long time?
Yeah, it was 909 days in between Andre getting hurt and stepping on the floor in that first scrimmage game. If you would have asked me a week ago before he played, I would have told you Andre Roberson is going to be a nice piece to have. I don't think he's going to affect, you know, winning. Like a lot of guys, you can plug into a lineup and you could say, you know, that guy might get you one win in a seven-game series. Like, he might push you over the edge in a close game. I did not think he was going to be that, just because, you know, even looking back to Media Day, which was strangely almost a year ago with how the schedule has shifted, he was telling us at Media Day, I'm full go. Like, we have training camp next week. Like, I'm there. Whenever we have preseason games, I'm playing. And that just didn't happen. He kept having setbacks. You know, on top of the fact that it's been 909 days, I thought he wouldn't look like himself. But what I think Billy Donovan has done, and he's talked about this a lot these past couple games, is that since January of 2018, when Andre got hurt, the game has changed a lot. And a guy, Andre, that used to play a little bit of shooting guard, a little bit of small forward, for this team during these two scrimmages actually played power forward. So, yes, he might have lost a step, and he won't be the perimeter defender he once was, but he's still a very smart defender. He's always in the right spot. I think he's a guy that can actually be effective in a backup four spot behind Danilo Gallinari. And he actually played some center on offense. So he was guarding the power forward position on defense. He was playing small ball center on offense, kind of a PJ Tucker role. And he looks really good at it. So I think, although I'm the guy that always says take everything in a scrimmage with a grain of salt, I think Dre might have sold me on him being an impact player, especially after hitting two go-ahead threes in the final, you know, minute or two of that last scrimmage against the 76ers and winning the game for the Thunder single-handedly.
No, I mean, yeah, I think I'd be in the same stance as you, where going into this, I'm thinking, maybe not. Maybe he could make a little bit of a difference. But no, it's really just remarkable, especially like 909 days. That I didn't really have that number memorized or really know it as well as you do. So, like, that's just flabbergasting to think that he's able to make a meaningful contribution after being away for so long. But just looking at the bigger picture here for Oklahoma City, and something I don't think people talk about a lot is the Thunder have one of the brightest futures, I feel, in the NBA, because they have a lot of promising young players under contract for the foreseeable future, but they also have a large cachet of future draft picks, especially from that Paul George trade and even the Russell Westbrook trade as well. Like, the Thunder are set up for the future, don't you think? And do you think it's just not really a point that's discussed much on the national circuit, that Oklahoma City is really set up for like long-term sustainable success? And it's just kind of an amazing pivot after losing Kevin Durant a few years ago and then having to say goodbye to arguably the face of the franchise and Russell Westbrook. Like, they're set up for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating how it's all played out, especially when, you know, in that Paul George trade specifically, you get all of those picks, plus you get maybe the future of the franchise and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You get Danilo Gallinari, who, although his contract is up at the end of the season, could be a sign-and-trade candidate since Oklahoma City has his bird rights. Like, looking back on that trade, if Shai ends up being what he's supposed to be or what he could be, like, take the picks out of the equation, that might be a good trade for Oklahoma City, and it could be a good trade for the Clippers if they win it. But the fact that you get a guy like that plus five picks, I mean, it's remarkable what Sam Presti's done. Now, here is what kind of worries me. yes, Sam Presti has a great history of draft picks. You know, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Serge Ibaka, the list goes on and on. It's hard to do that again. It's hard to do that in general. It's hard to do it twice. You've got tons of teams out there. Phoenix Suns, for example, if you look back at some of their drafts of the past, you know, guys like Dragan Bender, among many other names that you've seen in the past, they just because you have a bunch of high picks or first round picks in general doesn't always pan out. So what I think will happen, just kind of knowing Sam Presti and how he loves young proven guys, you know, when you have 16 picks over the next 5 or 6 years, like obviously you can't use all those picks, right? Some of them are gonna have to be bundled, some of them are gonna have to be traded. I could totally see Sam Presti trading for a disgruntled star, you know, a Ben Simmons, a Devin Booker, one of these guys that is still young but also proven. When you have that many picks, like there's not many other teams that can match the value that you could offer a team for a guy like that. So if I had to put money on it, a lot of those picks won't actually be picks Oklahoma City uses. They'll either be bundled to move up in drafts, or they will be bundled to trade for a young guy.
Actually, I never really thought of that, like prying per se, but being able to angle yourself and position yourself to get a Devin Booker or a Ben Simmons, because that would be, especially Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander just defensively would be pretty stupid, because I don't know if the Thunder would play him and get cute like Philadelphia does and play him at point guard. But I mean, even at power forward, like if you wanted to put Shea and Ben in your backcourt together, like good luck defensively, just trying to score against them. Like that'd be a lot of fun. And I think that's a smart way to go about it too, because you can't. Yeah, I think drafting four cornerstone pieces, three of which ended up being MVPs in Westbrook, Harden, and Durant, like I don't think that's obviously doable again. But I know I like the way you think, and I think that's just, again, really impressed with how Oklahoma City's pivoted, and I think it's just good team building. And Sam Presti once again proves he's one of the top GMs in the league.
Yeah, and think about this too, is, you know, if the 76ers crash and burn in the playoffs this year and maybe don't get out of the first round, and they think, man, we've got to pivot in some way. I mean, talk about the season Chris Paul's had. If the Sixers want to win now, if you're Oklahoma City, you're calling the 76ers and saying, hey, give us Ben Simmons. He doesn't fit in your system. You play him the wrong way. He can't shoot threes. We'll give you a guy in Chris Paul that you saw last year elevate a team with a fraction of the talent that I think the 76ers have on paper. He's a true point guard. You can run him. You can have, you know, Tobias at the three. You can try Horford and beat at the 4-5 again. I mean, it would be a completely different team, and you could offer Chris Paul and some of those picks to do that.
I think that's a really compelling idea and something that I'm going to start running with. Just, I don't know if you've shared this before, but if it was born on Locked On Cavs, I'm very happy it was. So, I don't know. But, Nick, before we go, I have to ask you, and I've been asking everybody who has come on to work on Locked On Cavs Under the Bubble with us, who do you think wins the first and possibly last Disney NBA bubble title?
Man, it's such a tough question. There's some really, really, really good teams. The Bucks have had the best record in NBA this season to this point. They've got, in my opinion, the best player in the NBA in Giannis. I'm still not completely sold that they have what it takes to beat a team that has a guy like LeBron or a guy like Kawhi. I mean, we've seen it time and time and time and time again. Those two guys, when it comes time to the playoffs, they flip a switch, and it's just different. And to this point, as good as Giannis is, we have not seen him flip that switch, in my opinion. He's been excellent in the playoffs, but the greats are the guys that elevate their team every year. You know, you saw it in Cleveland. There was years that, you know, the Cavs weren't the favorite in the East. I mean, I think everybody knew that there was a great chance they were going to make it to the finals just because they had done it so many years in a row, but it wasn't like they were the number one seed every year. So I haven't seen Giannis elevate his team to that point yet. So I'm going to go with one of the LA teams, and I'm going to stick to my gut that I've been saying for a while now and go with the Clippers. Kawhi Leonard is going to win a third NBA Finals MVP. with his third different team.
You know what? I think you are, off the top of my head, the first guy to pick the Clippers. It's been Lakers and Bucks for a while now. So I think, you know what? I think any of those three picks is a smart pick. And Nick, this is going to be it for us for today. We'll definitely have to do this again sometime. But before we go, tell everyone where they can find you on social and everything else. And is there anything you want to plug? I know you just joined Slam, so there's something to talk about right there.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at CraneNBA. That's CrainNBA. Most of my stuff's on there. I've got it all linked. Like Evan said, I started doing a little bit of league-wide coverage for Slam Online. Today, I put out my first piece breaking down the final eight games for each team in the bubble and kind of how their strength of schedule looks. Other than that, I think that's all I got. It's a pleasure as always, Evan. Appreciate you having me on. I always love reading your work, and I'm excited to see what your team in Cleveland does this offseason.
Well, they're not under a bubble for now. They might be in Chicago, but for now, it's fun to talk about the Thunder and talk about the NBA as a whole. It's something we haven't got to do in a while. And again, we really appreciate it, and we appreciate for everybody listening, and be sure to stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs Under the Bubble. Until next time, go Cavs.